The computer's not even in the same device that you're looking at me through. No, it's called cable.
It's on top of my PC. You know, those things. I haven't got a story yet. I need to find a story.
Well, you're last in the rotation, so you've got plenty of time, mate. Just don't forget to talk. Okay. Good evening. Okay, so welcome. Go on, sorry.
What we need to do as soon as you're ready for us to throw stories at you is wait. So Mueller has to go first.
That one then. I ain't got a story yet.
Good evening. Welcome to the big show. Yes, we're here to discuss all of the big stories that have occurred in tech, all the things that everyone else shies away from. The underbelly of the internet may pop up during the course of this show, but we have four fearsome warriors who are not afraid to take on that challenge. Starting us off, top left, Monsignor Grant, how the devil are you, dude?
I'm very well, mate. I'm very
you
well.
Grumpy busy old as fart. Always.
Grumpy old fart, yeah. I was bought this for Christmas. I couldn't argue with it.
Yeah. No.
It's correct.
Absolutely. How have you been this week? You're in the rotation for the next few weeks, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm here until you keep me out.
While you're in lockdown,
it's,
yeah, we'll
it's
take
good
it.
For while I'm in lockdown. I mean, before I could never do it because these would always happen either on when they were Friday nights. It was the days I was travelling back home usually. On now I'm in lockdown. I'm here, so yeah, I'm more than happy because I don't see that many people as well. It's quite nice. It's a very enjoyable thing. Come see you, as we said last week. Come and see your mates for half an hour, a couple of hours, I know, an hour or so. It's great. Have a laugh.
Good, mate. We're quite happy to have you. You can take the regular line three slot. Based on the fact Attlee's let us down again. Jesus Christ, Attlee, what are you like?
You know, the problem is Canadian internet.
Oh, so it's a real issue.
It's just too nice to say it.
And really? They don't Canadians just don't complain enough. He's rude enough to not show up at the last minute. He does send a message, though, to be fair. Give him credit. He does go, I'm not coming tonight, fellas. But it's usually at the end, you know, last minute. But yeah, Attlee, gross and balls, complain about your internet connection, for Christ's sake. Next to him. Jeffrey, how you doing, buddy?
I am doing well.
So yeah. Stressed out on podcasts, he's come sans tea.
I know. Yeah, I just wrapped up one. Here I am. And I think there's another one later today. But, you know, it's how I am.
Good
night. Oh, and then back here again tomorrow morning.
Are you well?
I am well. The skies are clear because the massive forest fires are fairly well contained.
Good.
And, yeah.
What's the Boulder Cougar report?
The cougars are staying kind of hidden right now.
Or mountain lion.
Because it got cold for several days and we had all that snow. But to take their place, the raccoons are out in force and a new problem, mice everywhere.
Oh, really?
I just want to go outside with a flamethrower.
Wow. That would be, I think you might have problems with RSPCA or something like that, or the equivalent of that. Humane Society of America.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. I mean, there's enough of a mouse problem right now that for the first time I've actually seen some droppings in my place. It's crazy.
I'm completely ignoring the cop issue that there's a bloke with a flamethrower in High Street.
Yeah, but I'm white, so they'd be fine with it.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah, no problem.
I ordered this insane mouse trap that it can hold like up to 10 mice after it gets them, and it electrocutes them. And if it shows up in time, that will be my cool thing. We'll do a live unboxing of this ridiculous mouse trap.
Hang on, surely that only works if all 10 of them go in. So if there's 10 of his mates out for a party one night and they all go in the mouse trap together, then you're going to get 10 of them. But if one goes in and dies, the rest are going to go fudge that.
Well, I can live in hope that they're stupid enough that when the first one goes in and dies and it gets dumped into this little box underneath, they don't realize he's gone. Or they think, hey, let's go in and see where our friend
is. He's got a cool place to sleep.
Yeah.
I got some of those humane ones.
One after another, they just go in and get to take their permanent little mouse nap.
Okay.
I wasn't allowed to make mine have permanent now snaps. I got these ones, but they go in and it traps them. So in the morning, I come down and find two of the idiots underneath my sink, and then I take them outside and free them, come back in and set them up again, and they'd be back again the following day. It took about a week before they finally went away.
The thing is, he hasn't worked out that the mice are playing fetch with him.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, they totally are.
Yeah, completely. They got me under control. I mean, it stopped. To be fair, they stopped after about a couple of weeks, but it was a couple of weeks of finding the mice every day.
Just tell everyone in the local community, there's a gullible twat down here who just keeps taking us and throwing us out. We get a nice kip in the sleep. You know, it's nice and warm. And then go out during the day, which we do anyway. And yeah. Next in, Patrice. How you doing, Mrs.?
I'm doing good. Doing good. It's been another crazy week.
Now, status of the laptop with IMN Max, has it gone back?
It's still there.
Not replicated the fault yet?
He's trying to reproduce the fault. That's a little bit tricky. I mean, it was tricky for me to get it to do it here. So, yeah, I'm going to work with him tomorrow to try to figure out how to do that.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. IMN Max, we love IMN Max.
Yeah.
I'm going to go and see him in the morning. Because I think I've screwed up. Didn't run a tester over it. Nice. And Muller knows all about shag PCs because he was there trying to stop me from shagging it up. Muller, how you doing, mate? Long time since seeing you on the show.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I was kind of in the blues, you know what I mean?
Well, you're a blues supporter, aren't you?
Yeah, that's another reason as well.
Oh, that's why you were down. But
they're kind of doing okay. Do you like my new office?
They're very good, mate. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, how nice is that?
Yeah, well, you know.
Got to be 100 grand's worth.
Well, you know, it's like a startup. You know, it's like UK Google.
Good, nice, mate. Yeah. What are you starting up in? What's your business?
I haven't figured that out yet.
Okay.
You just got to look good doing it.
Typical startup.
Yeah.
I got the office. I got all the furniture. I just need some people that know what they're talking about.
You know, when they said innovative thinking, they were actually thinking that you would innovate by creating an idea and then building an office, not building an office and then creating an idea. That's not what innovation is.
Well, to be honest with you, I thought I'd do it differently.
Okay. Well, think different. There we go. So it's an Apple-type business. Jolly good.
Yeah. It's definitely... It's a great office.
Sorry again, Patrice.
I said, isn't that what Quibi did? Like, collect...
Oh, very good. Oh, I like that. Very good. The Week in Tech, all of the stuff that's gone on, all the big stories. Ian Grant has already just slid straight in there and got the first one. He's cheating. You're supposed to wait till I go fastest fingers, but a new way to plug in a human brain to a computer via veins. Oh, my God.
Yes. I saw this a couple of weeks ago. It's an older story, but it's bloody brilliant. It's those of us older. Do you remember, anyone remember the William Gibson book Neuromancer?
Mm-hmm. Necromancer.
Neuromancer. Yep. It was
okay. Totally
it was the
story.
Dawn of cyberpunk as we know it. Around the same time, Blade Runner was a first sort of appeared on cinemas. William Gibson wrote this excellent book about this far-flung future where people plug themselves into the computer. You clunked it into the back of your head in some form, and then you joined, and then you were joined at one with a computer.
Right.
And looking at this, I mean, it's fantastic tech. This is made real, and it's relatively simple technology they're using. It's basically an electrode on a stent. They embed them in you, and in this case, it's used for disabled people.
I'm just going to say that the phrase "they embed them in you" is what kind of puts me off.
But if you're, say, sort of very physically disabled, multiple sclerosis or whatever, you know, two people with paralysis due to something really unpronounceable, Lou Gehrig's disease. So, but they are basically, they could control a Windows PC, send text,
wow,
go online, shop. Apparently it takes a little while for the machine learning to kind of get a grip with your thoughts and what you want to do, but you'll soon, once you've got there a little while, you can then go move a mouse around a screen, click, type. It's fabulous. What a thing.
That is pretty impressive.
What a thing. I mean, my stuff about Neuromancer and plugging into the neural nets a bit is a bit flippant in a way, but what a bit of technology.
Well, I mean, when you were talking about it, I was thinking about the Johnny Mnemonic kind of thing. Wind Riders mentioned the Matrix kind of stuff.
Johnny Mnemonic is William Gibson.
Yeah.
He wrote that as well. That's a film based on the ideas of the...
carrying the information in your brain, hacking into your own brain. The Matrix as well, Wind Riders mentioned in the chat room.
It's all of that made real. That's fantastic again. I mean, last week we had jetpacks. This week we've got plugging yourself into a computer completely.
I'm not, this is going to sound really like I'm being really facetious, and I'm not, but I just thought, you know, if you had this, can you imagine the work rate of Stephen Hawking?
Yes. No, completely.
I'm not trying to be stuff
like this. A lot of the stuff he drove from the little ThinkPad that he used to have in the back of his...
Well, he was dictating
chair was a lot of this kind of gear, the earlier generations thereof.
Yeah, he was dictating using his eyes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is sort of one step further in. It's the same. It's that same kind of technology. Patients with locked-in syndrome with ALS using accessible brain computer interface.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a fabulous idea.
This is big for anybody who has any motor issues. Like a friend of mine, her daughter, she has something called Friedreich's ataxia, which basically, from what I remember, is like it shuts down or it like attacks your autonomous nervous system. And like she's 7 and she can't coordinate really her movements anymore. And like for her, this probably would be really helpful because it allows her to control things that she probably otherwise couldn't.
That's fabulous. There's a thing here. I was just reading down in the article, another thing in the article that was saying about how there's a bit of technology they can, they can place a mesh of electrodes onto the surface of the brain. Mm-hmm. And then they could hook them up well enough that you could actually be able to speak again.
Well, there's one line in this whole story that just blows my mind, which is that it takes a bit of time to train, but then after a few weeks of work, both patients could use an eye tracker to move a cursor and then click with a thought.
Yes.
Then click with a thought. Comprehend that.
Doesn't that blow your mind? It's fabulous.
Unbelievable.
Love it, love it, love it. As a bit of technology, that's...
FDA's that's approved
proper,
it.
That's proper stuff where we... I mean, flipping things like flying around with jetpacks, but this is proper stuff. This is where technology should be going and where technology should be. It's brilliant. I love it.
No, it's excellent. Any negatives to this, though? I mean, if at what point does... I mean, at this point, obviously, it's clearly a thought process that triggers a yes-no response. It's binary. But, you know, that will only enhance where you can probably think words and it will type them, potentially, as a future item. Mm. And then, you know, if we work out where linguistics takes place or visual representations and stuff can be lifted and that kind of thing, and you think a picture and then draw it, or there's... There's got to be boundaries to this, which are dangerous.
What if you get a virus?
Well, thank you for... He's only been back on the show for 5 minutes, and we've got a Mueller level of intervention straight away.
Well, hold on a minute. I was watching Deep Space Nine, and they put things in to stop this woman plugging in. It was like a firewall kind of thing, and gave her a nasty pain if she tried to break in.
Yeah.
Possible.
Well, I don't think you could hack... Well, I know Johnny Mnemonic was about hacking his own brain, but I don't think you could hack into someone's brain in that way. That would be a bit different, because that's electrical input, whereas this is about electrical output. Brain, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, but if there's an input, there's an output, you can always reverse current.
No, these are all outputs.
This is purely a one-way. This is an out. But it's Johnny Mnemonic is a character in this book.
But just because you can do an output recognition, it doesn't mean that you can necessarily reverse that and give an input recognition, surely.
Mm.
There's no two-way street that's automatically there.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, there is some research into, like, I think for people with, I want to say with migraines especially, where they're trying to, like, input certain signals into your brain to like prevent that from happening.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a couple of migraines. The one migraine I had, which I remembered, was the weekend that I had pneumonia, which Muller remembers because he came and visited me in the hospital. But that's the only time I've really had a bad migraine, and it was like someone was shoving a knitting needle in just above my left eye. It was like they'd separated me, my skull and my eyeball, and shoved a knitting needle between the two, which I do know would be fatal. Thank you. My wife suffers cluster headaches and stuff like that, as well as, which I know are migraines. So the thing is, that's very localized, though, isn't it, migraines? Whereas if you get a headache, especially things like eye strain and that kind of stuff, or eye fatigue, you just tend to get this general lethargy and general ache, whereas migraines are a very, very focused pain. So I can imagine that actually there would be a good control for migraine because it's so localized.
Yeah.
CT scans or whatever and work out which bit of where the pain center is, so they can then switch it off almost. Is that the idea?
Well, this is like when we talk economics and Bob Beach is in the chat room and goes, "You're all a bunch of twats." We're all sitting here postulating on neuroscience. And actually, most of the people who are doctors in neuroscience are a bunch of twats relatively to the scope of the knowledge of the entire brain. You know, we know about 5% of how the brain works. And then you've got four idiots, and Muller is even worse. talking about neuroscience on a podcast, a technology podcast. But no, I mean, I would have thought the more localized, but you see, this is the thing that always amazes me. So Sharon's had a problem with her right shoulder, and you can see a physical change in the musculature with her right shoulder, and she's got some exercises to do, and she went to the osteopath, and I've got a friend who is an osteopath, and he had a look at her, one of the girls that worked for him had a look at her, Sharon. She's like, right, okay, this is all muscular, it's not an issue, just need to get you to do some exercises, a bit of strength. So Sharon's been doing the exercises. But the whole time, she's saying, right, this pain in your shoulder is because of deficiencies in your pelvic floor. Okay. And then, so you do these exercises for your pelvic floor at the same time as doing these exercises with your arm, and it'll improve. Now, here's the really weird bit. It has. And then Sharon the other day came back from having seen Danielle, and she went, when I do the pelvic floor exercises and the shoulder exercises, you've got to rub halfway up my, a hand span up my calf on the side. And I'm like, that's where you're sitting going, there's a camera. There's somewhere a camera watching me, and I'm going to get someone pop out in a minute and go, you're a dickhead. Which may be true, but the thing is, it's like Sharon does the exercise. I'm sitting there and I'm rubbing on her leg back and forth, a hand span up from her ankle. And she goes, that's different. That's way different. That's really working. Mm-hmm. And her shoulder is, you know, I can't argue. The shoulder is getting better.
Yeah. No, it's the human body.
Human bodies are complicated.
Yeah, and that's the thing where I'm sitting thinking about the migraine stuff. You're going, oh, actually, it's a really focused pain, but actually that could be referred from something else. Yeah, there's another centre in the brain that's causing the pain here. Because, I mean, the brain can't feel pain, can it? So,
yeah. From what I've understood, migraines, it's kind of like an electrical storm in your brain. Like, it is actually going all over the place. But you can apparently, from what I remember, you can stop it somehow if you trigger something in a certain area. At least in mice, like, I mean, it's not in humans yet, so we don't know.
I love the fact that we're having this conversation, and the phrase, from what I understand, carries zero weight.
Yeah, it's like 0.1% of what I remember even about the story. So
it's dead interesting. I mean, I would love to see. Well, there's stuff with Parkinson's, isn't it? Where, you know, the Emma watch, you put a thing on your wrist and then all of a sudden your hand stops twitching and you can draw and do all the stuff that you would used to do. My mum's got Parkinson's and she's got a terrible movement in her left hand. And it spread a lot less than I thought it would in the last 5 years. I'd love to get her an Emma watch so that she could do crochet and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Not available. But that's all just electrical stimulus, reverse electrical stimulus, and then there's things where you can get implants in your head which will help, or you know, there's loads of technology that will help with that kind of stuff. It's really weird.
Yeah, we're very slowly learning even like how our body works. And
oh, the brain is. I think we probably know less about how the brain works than we do about dark matter.
Probably. Yeah.
We know neurons dark fire, matter, but how they fire, what they fire for.
That tells us something about it.
Yeah, no. I mean, neurological firing, that kind of stuff. Mullis fallen off his chair.
No, I've just gone to fetch me cold thing.
I opened some oil for that chair.
Oh, this chair needs replacing, mate. It's like you're in the studio.
It's like mine. No, that's gone now. I've palmed that off onto Ellis, and I've got a brand new chair down here now that I got. I did a job for someone, and they said, oh, thanks, mate. Anything else you'd really like? I said, yeah, I'd love a new chair for the office. Done, mate. No problem at all. They brought me an office chair.
Nice.
Patrice, your story, this is an interesting one. This is something close to my heart. Amazon expands its in-garage delivery.
Yeah, so they started that, I want to say, 2 years ago, actually in the Phoenix area as a trial, where they, I think, partnered up with one of the electric garage door opener manufacturers, basically allowing Amazon delivery vans to like open your garage door and like deposit your boxes in there and then close them again. And now, I mean, kind of during COVID, they already started expanding that. And now it is available, well, I would say most of US, not everywhere yet, like not in the small areas, but like Chicago, LA, Phoenix, Dallas, Houston, Boston, DC, New York, like the big areas.
So in garage assumes that you've opened the door for them, or no, the doors open all the time. They can open it.
They can open
it. Yeah, they've got to have a particular type of opener.
The delivery driver, if he has a package for you, gets approval or like gets access, like one-time access to your garage door and can open it.
So is this a code?
It's just an app, like the garage door openers, they're just like IoT devices. I have one of those in Phoenix. And they just use an app and just open and close the garage door.
So when you place your order, you give them a code saying,
you connect your garage door opener to probably Amazon, and then they can generate a one-time code for that delivery driver.
So that delivery driver can deliver that parcel, but can never open that garage door again afterwards.
Exactly.
Right.
Okay, so this is friggin' brilliant.
It is. And it's now, really cool.
Do you want to know why this is friggin' brilliant? Because my dad is just about to buy an electric garage door, because he goes out and he's got an up and over garage door that, you know, slides up. And he can't get it to go all the way up to get his scooter out. He's got a little mobility scooter. So he has to use a mop to push it all the way up, and then he has to take the mop outside because he's got to pull it partially down, then he's got to duck under, he's 90, and then stand the mop back up and then close the door and then get in his scooter and drive off. So he said, could I have a roller shutter door, please, Ewan? Yes, Dad, we can get you a roller shutter door. That's not a problem. You're paying for it. I don't care. So we've bought the guy's coming tomorrow morning, actually, to measure up for it. But so the other day, right, my dad likes protein drinks. The Ensa protein drinks or something like that. That's they're really good for him. So I buy those for him, and then I've got his credit card on my Amazon account, so I can send it to him. And Amazon are notoriously bad at pushing the button and running away. It's like they're playing knockdown ginger with the whole of Castle Bromwich, and it's probably the same across the whole world. So this guy, right, gets I've ordered 50 bottles of this stuff, and they're not small bottles. You know, you're talking half liter bottles, perhaps. So there's 25 litres of this protein drink. But the guy comes, pushes the button, doesn't wait for me dad to answer the door, so he puts them on the doorstep.
Oh, no.
And then goes back to his van and pisses off, right?
Mm-hmm.
My dad comes to the door. My dad's 90. He's not going to pick any of these boxes up. He's got to wait for Ellis to come and do it. Admittedly, they're pretty heavy and no one's going to steal them, I wouldn't have thought. But the porch door from my dad's porch opens outwards.
No.
So he's locked in then?
It's like, if there's a fire, both my parents are dying because they can't even get out of the front door because of this twat. And you're just like, you're not the most intelligent people in the world, are you? You know, that's just, and my mom is bedridden, so she has to have some diapers. And they put those in front of the door and leave them. And there's like 100 diapers come at once and they weigh 25 kilos. Mm. My dad can't get out to, and even if he opens the garage door, he couldn't get out to move it. He has to sit there and wait for my son come round after school to do some jobs for him to then pick these out of the way and bring them in and sort them out and store them away. And so this would be brilliant if we get that garage door sorted tomorrow and we could give a one-time code to Amazon to get on that. That would be superb. Game changer.
This is way better than their system where if you have like a Ring doorbell, they can open your front door and put a package inside. That one just always creeped me out.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that statement has just got no written all over it.
Yeah, garages are usually less of an issue because, like, they're separated from the house and so on, like most places. Yeah, as I said, I've had one of those garage door openers. All you need is one of the, like, it's, I think, the biggest brand worldwide is the Chamberlain or Liftmaster brand. It's kind of the same company.
I think you've got to have a specific brand.
It has to be MyQ compatible, but that's it.
Oh, that's a good question to ask.
It was brilliant. I mean, I would drive up to my house. And on my CarPlay, it would just show open garage door, and I would just tap it, and it opened. And when I drove away, it would close. Like I never, like, because I'm the type
that's
of person
just beautiful.
That would forget. Like, I've left my garage door open for like almost full day because I just forgot.
You left it open for a whole day.
Yeah, like, I mean, a kind of a work day, not a full, like, full 24 hours, but like full work day. I just drove away in the morning and didn't think about it.
It didn't close automatically.
Well, I didn't have it by then.
Oh, right, okay.
Well, I got it.
But I bet you did right after that.
Away and it just closed.
Did you come home and find someone who parked their car in your garage?
No. Fortunately, also, there was nothing of value in the garage. And my dog was at home, so nobody came in. But still, I mean, as I said, it was brilliant. And I think this makes sense. I mean, Amazon has been trying a couple of things, like you could open like the trunk of your car, stuff like that, where I was always like, I don't know. But this is a good idea. I like it.
Yeah, now come on in the house, open the fridge, put the food in there. No worries at all. Totally love. I mean,
we probably pay someone to do that. But
We've had, I mean, I order a lot of stuff off Amazon. I've got a business account with them. And I've got to say, since I opened the business account, it is dead easy to get good customer service. I just ring it and go, that didn't happen. They go, not a problem. And just because I've got a business account, it's like instant, not a problem. No worries at all. I spend a lot of money with Amazon each year. That's fine. But
that's fine.
With the problem we have is they'll just drop stuff outside the front door and leave. And that's it. And you're just like, you didn't get a response. I'm not here. I've got no storage preferences listed on my account. So I haven't put, there's a safe place or anything like that. And there's a guy who drops the stuff off.
Yeah.
Doesn't push the doorbell. And just pisses off at the driver. And I've caught him today. I was like, did you ring the doorbell, mate? Yeah, I definitely ring the doorbell. So I pushed the doorbell. My phone rang straight away. I'm like, no, you didn't. And he just drops it and goes. And I bought some parts for Ellis for a computer. And 1,400 quid's worth. 1,400 quid's worth of computer parts. I came home one day. They sat on the front doorstep.
Yeah.
Just in plain view.
Yep.
I don't know whether that's
you're off your faces.
In England, yeah, but in Phoenix, we had like a huge issue with porch pirates because they would just drive around, like they would just follow the Amazon delivery driver and just pick everything up again.
Yeah. I mean, I would gladly just, I nearly thought about just, hi, where's my stuff? Please? Yeah, what? No, we definitely delivered it. Handed to resident. Funny arse. I've been in Leamington all day. It definitely wasn't handed to me.
Yeah, put it in front of the door and get a photo, and it's not your door.
Oh, no, I did have, actually, DHL did that. They tried to deliver a parcel here to the studio, and the guy had put a thing on saying, parcel attempted delivery. And I sent a message to the DHL. I was like, "What? Where is it?" And they sent me the picture and said, "This is where the delivery driver attempted delivery." I'm like, "Well, okay, that's not my address." It's like you've taken a picture of somewhere
Did they tell you that you were wrong and that is your address?
It's hard on this estate. So you know, like your postal code, a lot of places, postal code relates to at most 40 addresses. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's less in some places. But this whole estate, there's one road called Gorsey Lane that I'm on. And the whole of Gorsey Lane has exactly the same postcode. And Gorsey Lane is about half a mile long. So to actually find me, because I'm in an estate as well, and I'm at the bottom end of the estate. When you get to the end of the estate, if you turn left, there's actually more estate. So it's hard. It's a hard place to deliver to. But they're still.
Happened to me once where they said they had delivered it. They had delivered it to the apartment complex, just to a completely different number. So we found it.
Handed to resident, they got a picture of some old lady with a brand new coffee maker going.
Exactly. except this is great. I mean, I would use this.
Who's that? She's your mom. Yeah, right. What are you talking about? It's not my mom.
How do you know?
How do I know it's not my mom?
Well, his mum.
That's not even the question that.
That would be even the wrong country then. So.
Jeff, you've put a link into your story that I can't get any of the pictures to show.
Perfect.
Is it PS5 users already reporting console breaking flaw?
Yes. Yes. So today is the day PS5 is being delivered. And so there were people like reviewers and stuff that got them ahead of time. And so like they've had them for just a few days. And those people are already reporting that when the system goes into the mode where it's doing its storage rebuild, it just bricks the machine. And that's it. It's over. Your machine is just done.
And how much have they paid for this?
A new PS5 is several hundred dollars.
Yeah. Oh, and not cheap.
These are not cheap.
The upgrade to Xbox, they've got right, absolutely right, because it's so much cheaper, $249 for the base upgrade. Whereas PS5, you're into £600.
Yeah, this is not a cheap box, and apparently it's not one that works either. Or at least for very long.
It's about as useful as the cardboard box that Amazon delivers in your garage.
Right. And this is big enough if they put it in front of your door. Well, now you have to wait for Ellis to come around and pick it up for you.
Pick it up. The thing that always surprises me, and I'm not going to sound like an old idiot. The graphics on the PS4 are pretty freaking good. And the graphics on the Xbox One are unbelievably good. And I know there's going to be more computing power, but I don't think the game developers are up to it yet, are they?
Yeah, I think that for a lot of the game developers, what they need for their next big leap is ubiquitous VR. And right. Until that's a thing, there's only so much more they can do with the graphics horsepower that they have today.
I've got to disagree with you, because the new graphics cards on the PC are bringing in all sorts of things at the moment, new graphical things, and this new Xbox might do that. And another new thing that I've seen on Xbox is they brought out this new system. It's only in the US at the moment, where it's like a phone contract, and you can actually pay. If you pay for the, what's it called, where you buy the Game Pass? You buy the Game Pass, the full version, I think it's about $34, $35. and you actually, they give you an Xbox for 2 years. And after the end of the 2 years, the Xbox is yours, and the Game Pass, I don't know if it goes down in price, or you get a new one at the end of the... But I think that's the future of PC gaming is absolutely brilliant. And the with the new generation of graphics cards, this new Xbox might actually be the killer. I'm just saying.
Sure, I totally get that. But at some point, the graphics are so good, we just simply can't tell the difference with improvements. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the ceiling that developers are going to hit, because there's only so much we can perceive. And at that point, they need something else to make the consoles more enticing to people, and mm-hmm. And to be able to make the games that do that. That's where VR comes in. So once we have the ubiquitous VR, then we see the next big leap in gaming graphics. Of course, it won't matter with the PS5 because yours will be dead.
Yeah, and after that, the holodeck, right?
And then the holodeck, right.
Yeah, we need that. Mm-hmm. this issue is really interesting. Like, it seems to corrupt the external hard drive from what I've read in this article. So I don't know what they did, but like, basically, if you put your PS5 into sleep mode or rest, they call it rest mode for some reason, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It just corrupts the hard drive, and then the worst case, it even corrupts the entire system. Like, they had to send out a new one. So that's not good.
The Moore's law of computing, though, is kind of dead as an issue, isn't it? Because it was always that leapfrogging, wasn't it? Okay, so the developers had a new idea, but the graphics or the hardware wouldn't catch up, and then the hardware went ahead, and then the developers had, and that leapfrogging that formulated Moore's law and said that every 18 months you know computers would double, that kind of hasn't happened. And I've got a little MacBook Air here, and I got the 1 terabyte version, and I maxed it out on RAM, and this thing. It's not super fast, but it crunches. I can do Photoshop on it dead easy. Mm. You know, the Final Cut works for enough for when you're away from home and you're in a field somewhere. It's not as fast as my Mac Pro, but that's not what I bought it for. I didn't expect, there was no expectation of that. The Moore's law of the MacBook Pro versus the desktop is a bit defunct, really.
I mean, Moore's law only talks maybe about not after this the week. Number of transistors. So it doesn't really tell you anything what you do with it.
Yeah, but the principle of Moore's law was always about every 18 months the processing power of a computer doubled.
Yeah.
And that hasn't happened in the last 3 years, I would say. It's not doubling.
It definitely has slowed down. Like, it's not fully double anymore.
But reason it's not been doubling is because the fact there's been no pressure from developers for it to double.
The graphics cards are definitely going up, getting better and better. I mean, look at the latest batch of them with all sorts of shaders and RTX and all that sort of stuff. I mean, the graphics cards are coming on leaps and bounds, and they're being pushed by... The thing is that you don't really need a very powerful chip these days to drive the graphics cards. The graphics cards are handling so much more of the game than the processor. Mm-hmm. And... I think you need to look at the graphics cards rather than the processor.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, the US Navy bought a whole pile of PS4s just to use the GPUs, not for anything else. GPUs did all the processing. When was the Xbox, when was the PS4 released then?
Is it 2 years old now?
PS4?
Yeah, it must be that.
No, PS4 is way old.
PS4 way away than that. I've got one of them. That must be old.
It's going to blow your brains, boys. 2013.
Jeez.
Wow.
Really?
The PS4 is 7 years old, and it's still frigging good. So go for the Moore's Law thing that I've just been talking about, and it's blown it out of the water. That's an amazing console to maintain that kind of level of diligence and quality and You know, the envelope, it's done superbly well.
Yeah, I mean, what we're seeing is that, like, there is a, until we get to quantum computing, there is a limit to what we can do with the computing power.
My son,
we're making the devices smaller and smaller because that's the only thing we can do.
My son runs his PS4 probably for about 8 hours a day during the week, maybe 5 to 8 hours. He comes home from school, he'll have lunch, dinner, and then he'll start on his computer, and he plays computers till midnight, so 5 hours, say, maybe 6. And then at weekend, he gets up, he goes on it. All his mates are on there. I don't decry this. Everyone goes, oh, that's terrible. He's got no social skills. Rubbish, you're talking out your ass. He has got all of his mates, and he's got mates the world over. And I can't talk, I've got mates the world over from doing BTN. But he's got mates the world over, and he plays on his computer and talks to them all day, every day at the weekend. And the PS4 has allowed him to do that. And he's come out to the PS5, and I don't want one, Dad. Really? No, I don't want one. Because all my mates are on PS4 for a start, so there's that kind of, when all of his mates have got a PS5, yeah, okay, maybe he'll leap then. But at the moment, he's not that interested. He's like, from what I've seen of the graphics, it doesn't get that better. I'm not that interested.
Sure, it's backwards compatible.
Well, that's one of the things that gaming consoles have already really suffered with, isn't it? The compatibility of... we lost your video, by the way, Ian.
How's it gone?
The backwards compatibility of games. So there's a few of the Xbox 360 games will play on the Xbox One, but not many. And a lot of the PS3 games wouldn't play on PS4. You have to go through emulation if you wanted to watch them.
We talked about that a couple of weeks ago, that the almost all current Xbox games, so that run on the whatever the current selling version is, will run on the X and S. Almost all of them.
All of the Xbox One games?
I think, I don't know what the current version is, but we had a story the other week that Microsoft has tested almost all games, and they all run, and they will all run.
Yeah, there was. So when you look at the compatibility of Xbox 360...
Okay, that's a bit older, yeah.
360 to Xbox One, there was very few games that had actually worked natively. You had to emulate.
This jump, this generation, they have basically kept compatibility.
So all of your Xbox One games are going to play on the new Xbox S, and then all of the PS4s are playing on the PS5.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, that tells you that, like, there's just nothing that had to change.
No. I mean, that was always the thing that, it made no sense to me that there was no compatibility. There had to be. It's like this, I mean, Ellis and I had a conversation yesterday, and he was like, okay, so, Dad, so here we go. What's the best computer game you've ever played? Jet. Sinclair ZX Spectrum. He's like, what?
But Load Runner's a pretty awesome game too.
No, he was just like, what? Jetpack, is that like what? And he's thinking of Jetpack now. I'm like, no. Jetpack was a thing where you flew around, you had you only had a certain amount of energy, and your jetpack get up, and you had to go and pick up components, finish a level, and you couldn't land on the floor, and you only had you can only press energize on your jetpack a certain period of time before you start, you have to regenerate or recharge. And it was on the ZX Spectrum. What's a ZX Spectrum, Dad? Okay, that was a little computer that I had. Was it 48K? Stupid like that.
Yeah.
Ridiculously slow. And it's still the one that I said, the thing is, what you don't get is you're sitting going about games looking great, but games were really playable in the 80s and 90s. Those platforms really got, because they hadn't got graphics, so they had to get playability right. And the best and most enjoyable game I've ever had for playability was probably Jetpack.
No, the best one was Mad Mazogs.
Manic Miner is another one that was great. Daily Thompson's Decathlon was another one that was great. There's a lot of good games there.
Oh, yeah, there was.
There's a lot of ones on the Commodore and the Atari as well, which were good. Philip Gould had an Atari. James had a Commodore. Annie had an Acorn. And I had a Spectrum.
I just remember a game called Cosmo, but I don't know. I don't even know what it was, where it was. Like,
I'd probably started work by then, based on your age.
That
so.
Was like 90. I was definitely somewhere in it.
Yeah, well, I was working then too.
do you remember Mad Mazog, so, on the ZX80?
No, I didn't have an 80. I had an 81 on a Spectrum.
I had an 81 as well, but it was a spider. Well, there was spiders in the maze, and you ran through the maze without avoiding the spiders. and it was a never-ending game, and it was quite freaky for the I think it was 1976 or something like that, because I managed to buy one with my first wage packet when I worked for my dad, when I was still working at school. Still at school, but working for my dad for pocket money. And I think a ZX81 at the time and an 80 were about £100, which was a lot of money then for me.
Anyway. Yes, I remember them being advertised on the TV when they were thing, and there was some small schoolboy going into the shop. £100 for the latest.
Incredible. Well, my first wage, when I left school, my first wage in 1981 was £40 a week, so it was a lot of money.
Mm. Oh yeah.
There's Jetpack. Jetpack on the screen. Picking up components.
Oh, yes.
And fuel. So you can shut up, Patrice. And there's...
It was still colour, so...
It was brilliant.
Awesome, black and white.
8-bit.
The first games I played, I'm pretty sure, were black and white. There was... I think it was called Gorillaz.
Oh, Gorillaz. Yeah,
it was the QBasic, I think, was the programming language.
Yeah, and you throw the bananas at each other, and but, I mean, get the angle right.
Ellis was going on about, well, how do you, how do I get to play this game? Well, my ZX Spectrum was at my parents' house, and it still works the last time I tried to fire it up, so that's the problem. The big problem with the technology wasn't the fact that the ZX Spectrum won't work. The fact I haven't got a tape recorder.
Oh God, yes!
A cassette tape, so I can't load it. But I said,
there's a load of emulators.
I was gonna say, there's gonna be emulators, dude. Just go on and put ZX Spectrum emulator, and you'll get 1,000 games for free. There's got to be a Mac version with an emulator or something like that. Absolutely, and it'll play on. You could pull out a Panther G3 or something like that, and it'll still play.
The only problem is the games are still protected by law, aren't they? Copyright and stuff, so you can get the emulators, but unless you own the cartridge, and even then it's still iffy.
It's iffy, but I've got one of those PlayStation 1 Classic mini things that you could get. £30 it was, but you can modify that with a thing called AutoBleem, and then you can run emulators off the back of it, so you can run NES games. And there's probably a specky one for that as well, I'm sure.
The NES, bloody hell, the NES. What was the one that never took off? It did all right, but then it came with a Q.
I had a Dragon and a Jupiter, which I built myself. That was awful because you had to literally solder all the bits to the... And if you get a dry solder joint, it was... horrible to find it.
I started on the Amiga, so I was a bit later to the game.
Well,
Jeff, if there's somebody out there who wants to know what we're talking about, because we're talking absolute gibberish, that's fine. But go to britishtechnetwork.com/chat and navigate to the 12th of November. That's where the show notes are, effectively, and scroll down, and Jeff's just put in retrogames.cz. And there is a bunch of games there. Fill your boots, boys.
Oh, yes. Thanks, Dan.
300 shooter games, 119 sports games, 72 role-player games, 10-yard fight, 4D boxing, which is really rather 2D. Here we go. Activision Decathlon. That is Daley Thompson's Decathlon. And you used to sit and hold the controller... You'd have the wobble button because you had to wobble it, but you also had to push buttons. So you used to rock the whole controller in your hand like that, push the buttons in sequence. Baseball Stars, Basketball, which looks even worse. That looks like Pelota on a Binatone. Oh, this is fantastic, mate.
That is a really good... I'm just saying that to my good lady. Steel. She'll enjoy that.
Right, I've got to search for Jetpack in a minute. Fantastic. That's superb. Championship Bowling. There used to be a really good motorcycling game as well. Oh, there you go. International Grand Prix Racing. Cycles. That was, I remember that one.
So I've taken care of your whole weekend activities now.
Yeah, me sitting
probably stuff like Prince of Persia here as well. I mean, those, but that was a game and a half in its day. Mm. And it's obviously Gallagher and all those. Wolfenstein, naturally. And Doom, yawns.
Oh, but Doom was some my great first stuff. PC game.
Doom was quality. Wolfenstein was the first one I got to in that.
Yeah.
Wolfenstein was brilliant.
Yeah, I remember Wolfenstein.
The original FIFA Soccer from Electronic Arts, 1993. I guarantee I had that.
What was that one, mini cars, which you rode around a little track?
Mini micro, races.
Micro cars or something like that.
Oh, Micro Machines.
Micro Machines, that was it.
Yeah. Is that the Jeff Crammond one? Formula One.
It's an adult term.
This is great podcasting if you're on the sound.
Yeah, no. Leisure Suit Larry.
Oh, that.
No, that's a classic game right there.
Oh, yes.
Leisure Suit Larry.
I can't remember the game, but I had, when I had my Sega Mega Drive, it was one of those, the first Disney ones where you had, we had to solve a crime. And it was like vampires killing young American girls in a house. And it was absolutely awful. But it was, you had to buy it because it was the first of its kind, really, because it was basically a story that you had to go through. And it had little cut scenes and everything. And it was really good. I can't remember its name. But it's I think it was LucasArts.
This is a porn game in I'm guessing, Polish or something.
Well, they were cheerleaders, and they were getting killed by vampires, and it was really clever. It was, at the time, it was absolutely outstanding. And it, unfortunately, there was no porn.
No, there's an adult tab, and I'm playing a porn game here, and there's a guy who looks like he's from a bad 70s cartoon, and there's a nude on a calendar and a date next to them, 13th of something, which is in Polish, I guess. And the old boy's talking to... could be a boy, it could be a girl, I don't know. If you're in Polish and this is really dirty, I do apologize, but this is like the cut movie.
I'm just playing Formula One in a DOS box here, and it's fantastic.
So
God doesn't half, it doesn't half go on the
The blonde boy girl is being chatted up by a bloke with a dodgy moustache and black hair with a beer, not beard.
I'm going, oh, that's it, I've crashed badly. I was going,
oh, no, I've got a choice now. I've got to get to the bedroom, surely.
Oh. Great podcasting.
I'm in the bedroom. I'm going to look at the picture. Teja Baba.
Oh, my gosh.
Teja Baba.
Jeff, what did you start?
Is that like Jiggity Jiggity, but in Polish?
It is Jiggy Jiggy, absolutely.
Giggity Giggity.
You know, when giggity, I giggity, whatever it is from that thing from the chat, I just thought that I was being nice by giving Patrice the ability to play Cosmos Cosmic Adventure again.
Mike, Muller, you need to find a different link other than bloody Apple News, because that ain't going to open properly. It's a pain in the ass. I hate Apple News.
Okay, well, I can't find the link, but I can tell you what the story is, and you can find your own link. It's a fairly simple link. It's basically NASA have found water on the moon.
Did we cover this the other week?
I don't know. I'm just thinking.
Yeah, I think we did.
Oh God! In that case.
No, because the thing is, they've not so they always thought that there would be water on the moon, but it would be in deep craters where the crater was in permanent shade, so it couldn't heat up and it couldn't evaporate. But they're saying that they've actually found it in the microstructure of the soils, which you would have thought they'd have got that back from the stuff that they brought back from the moon landings, which don't write in and say they were fake because you're talking shite.
Oh, no, it would have evaporated.
On the way back?
Well, that, possibly. I mean, I'm not saying it would, but it's not saying where they got the rocks from. But, I mean, you can imagine now, with water on the moon, they can now do a proper moon base, and we can actually maybe start hitting out towards maybe Mars or go elsewhere. And I've actually saw another article, which I can't find now. I was looking for it. They were talking about setting up sort of not on the surface of Venus, but in the atmosphere of Venus, setting up a station there to take advantage of some of Venus's.
That's going to be tough because I mean the Russian probe to Venus, because Russia's the only one that's really sent probes to Venus. And all of them lasted about 20 minutes.
Yeah, but they're not going to the surface. They're not about hovering over the surface where they can take advantage of the... apparently, there's a lot of, like, not petrol, but lots of the... What they call those?
Hydrocarbons.
Hydrocarbons and all sorts. They got loads of power and they could do lots of science and they can maybe even start to look at it. But I did actually see another article that says actually Jupiter was the culprit that caused Venus to be how it is today. But I read that.
I have seen that. It influenced its orbit because they reckon that Venus was closer to Earth, wasn't it? And it was more Earth-like.
Yeah, and it got sucked or reversed. I don't know exactly how it worked.
Well, it got pulled out of orbit around the Earth, near the Earth, and then got slung round and back into the Sun, and it ended up being trapped in a close orbit.
Yeah, but the thing is, Venus is has an awful lot of stuff that we could use to explore the rest of the, well, at least the solar system. It's called the hydrocarbons and stuff, so there's definitely plans or thinking about putting something in orbit around there to use that. And so obviously then we got Moon, Venus, Mars. And then from there, we can strike out. But, you know, I think the water on Mars is very important. Because what's that stuff they got on the moon, which is the...
Helium-3.
Helium, yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
well, that's a power catalyst, though, isn't it? That's about that's about energy.
Yeah, I mean, water and energy is important as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got hydrogen and oxygen, which you can split, yeah.
Exactly. I mean,
but you need a big supply of that then.
Mm-hmm.
It's rocket fuel.
It is rocket fuel.
By the way, I've put Mueller's expanded link in the chat.
Yeah. The I mean, there's no question that there is more resources on the moon that we could utilize for exploration. I've got a serious doubt that we're ever going to, well, we certainly aren't going to, I mean, we'll be lucky if we even make it back to the moon or Mars in my lifetime, but even in my kids' lifetimes, we're not going to go, we might not make Mars, and we probably certainly won't go beyond Mars in terms of a manned mission. We're not hitting Triton and those kind of places that we know have got water, in inverted commas, no.
Mm.
You know, and and I really don't believe that for any stretch of the imagination we will ever have contact with any other intelligent species across the universe, because the gaps are just too big. We've had a spaceship that's doing 35,000 miles an hour for the last 40 years, and it's still not far enough away to do any contact with anything. And you're talking a million years just to get to the nearest star.
Solar system.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking millions of years at that speed just to get to the nearest star. Obviously. Which is probably not got a habitable planet around it, to Kepler stuff.
Yeah, I mean, not unless we figure out a way to travel in quotes faster than light. Not really, but like find a way to travel faster than that.
Mm.
It's gonna be difficult.
But the problem you got then is that the mass of a hydrogen atom being collided with at the speed of light, the mass of the atom becomes astronomically.
That's what I meant. Yes. Like we're not traveling faster than light or even at the speed of light. We have to find a way to travel, like, to bridge the gap somehow.
Yeah, like, I mean, warp speed.
That's what making
a time-space warp bubble around your starship.
The interesting thing is that Voyager 1 has found that there's a change in density in space, isn't it? So space is denser outside of our solar system, now in interstellar space. And it's saying that there is a density change in the universe, effectively, in the space that it's surrounding. So that's I don't know if that's dark matter or what. Here we are postulating about shit we know nothing about, as usual.
Again!
like you've never let that stop us.
Yeah, if you want to write in and say you blokes are idiots, you know f*** all about what you're talking about, You're correct. Don't waste an email.
We should rename the show into Let's Talk About Stuff.
Talking Shit.
No clue about.
The Talking Shit Show.
Well, did anyone watch that show on Netflix, Mars?
Yeah, it was crap.
It was a bit dreary, but it was quite interesting. And I actually quite enjoyed it. I watched both series, and I thought it was quite interesting, the fact that we actually might, at the back end of my life, and the back
not
end
the way
of
you drink.
I'm only half a bottle. But, you know, I think I definitely think that Elon Musk or somebody like him is going to get to Mars in my lifetime.
Well, he's planning to get to Mars in his lifetime and die on Mars, isn't he? Not in an accident.
I don't care if he stays there or not, but I mean, preferably he does. But I reckon he will get there quicker. I mean, I think we'll definitely have something on the moon. There's definitely plans by several nations to go to the moon and set up a base.
2024. We talked about this the other week. 2024. There's going to be, you know, I expect to see a moon landing in 2024. Otherwise, I'll be writing to my MP. But I think the thing that's got to be realistic with Mars is the fact that if we're going to do Mars in the next 30 years, it's got to be a one-way trip. People that go there have got to realise that they ain't
going back.
Well, the first lot, anyway.
I'm not sure about that.
Definitely the ones that start. That's what that Mars thing on Netflix said. The first lot that go have got to be looking at really setting up their colony and making it viable before they even start to think about coming back. So, and I actually found that quite interesting. It seemed very reasonable. And a lot of the scientists on there were going for it as well. And they were backing it up as well. And I actually thought they were talking like 2030, 2040, something like that. So it's definitely within touching distance.
Yeah,
back into my life, definitely. But
target right now.
I love Muller's optimism that he thinks he's got another 20 years on the planet.
Mate, I'm pickled.
Good point. Good point. So am I. Yeah. No, it's. Have you seen Chris Hadfield's breakdown of? I think it was a Wired thing on YouTube. He did a breakdown of space films, and he's like, you know, so talk us through Gravity, and he's like, Gravity's pilot pants, physics in it is just bollocks. You know, the space shuttle spinning round, and then Sandra Bullock gets released from the Canada arm. And she flies off at a tangent. He's like she's under a completely different set of forces than everything else. That's just not happening. And he breaks down all of that stuff. But then, you know, he says about First Man, he said, everyone's so dreary in this. He said, space flight's a joyous thing. There's high fives everywhere. It's the most amazing thing you'll ever do in your entire life. Don't believe for one second that this is a correct portrayal of Neil Armstrong. But he talks an awful lot about the specifics of how you get to space, how you stay there, how you then move forward from that. And his realistic view is that you know, yeah, we can get back to the moon. We could do some stuff. But he was saying that the Martian, you know, the dust storm at the start of the Martian? He said that it's nothing like that. He said that the atmosphere on Mars, the density of the atmosphere is kind of like you go up to 100,000 feet above the Earth. It is very Spartan. He said there are dust storms constantly raging around the place. But he said they don't have the velocity, they don't have the density to do any harm whatsoever. They certainly aren't going to blow over a spacecraft. There is an atmosphere there that is challenging, but it is effectively, you know, as close to a vacuum as the moon is in terms of realistic workability.
Mm.
But in Mars, which was backed up by scientists, there were issues with those dust storms.
Yeah, I mean, they're massive dust storms. You're talking about, you know, half the planet is encased in a dust storm for half the year and that kind of stuff. It's monstrously big, but the density of the air and the density of the atmosphere isn't, and the speeds of the winds aren't high enough to cause massive, massive abrasion. You probably get, it'd be like a sandblasting machine maybe at worst.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, there can be many bad.
It's more like all this dust gets kicked up and then settles back down, and it's the settling dust that's
because the atmosphere is so thin, it takes so long for the dust to come back down.
Right. And then when it settles all over your solar panels, well, now you have to go outside and clean the damn panels again.
In the dark, because you lost your solar panels. Your lights don't work.
I could do that.
Muller,
right. Muller has a job.
We'd let you.
You're the official solar panel cleaner.
Yeah, just get me a cloth.
Yeah, I'm just sitting there. My Windows machine's dying. Like, Muller! Oh, we have some fun on this show.
At least I could build one. I mean, I've built that 3 times. It needs rebuilding soon, actually.
What? A Mars colony?
Well, my PC actually had it done.
Just because you've played Civ 4 a few times doesn't mean you know you're qualified in setting up a Mars colony, you muppet.
I don't know. I played Civ, the Interstellar one, I can't remember what it's called now, and I managed to set up a Mars colony there, and one on another planet as well. So I think I can.
So, Mr. Lowe, welcome to NASA. Tell us your qualifications for setting up a colony on Mars. Well, I played Interstellar Civ once.
Yeah,
or twice.
Get this man in a spacesuit.
You're hired.
Yeah. Yeah. We never had anyone so qualified before.
Get this man a
spacesuit. I was very friendly to the Asian, not the Asians.
The Asians?
The aliens. Hey? The aliens. And if you keep friendly with the aliens, they don't attack your station.
Oh, right. Okay. So what's going to be your first thing when you get up there, Mr. Lowe? Alien defense. Absolutely alien defense. I know we've never detected any, but alien defense. Absolutely.
No, make friends with them.
Oh, alien diplomacy.
Yeah, you've got to be friendly with them, because otherwise they start attacking and killing all your stuff.
It'd be bad, wouldn't it?
I bet NASA have never thought of that, mate. I think that's wise words, pal. Well done. This podcast and all the other lunacy that takes place on this network is supported by people that really shouldn't do it, because good God, the bollocks that's talked on here. TSO host, we can't thank them enough, because they allow all of this crap to go out on a regular basis. We would be lost without them. We say it every week, I know, and it gets boring, but they've got some fantastic dedicated server offers at the moment. £89 for a dedicated server. That's pretty impressive, isn't it? Get yourself along to them. Buy your hosting services from them. Use BTN20 if you want 20% off your basket. And you can be happy as Larry. But that's not what they want. What they want is the recognition of the brand. Get yourself out on the socials. Thanks at TSO Host for supporting at British Tech. That is all you need to do. If you are a BTN listener and you value this podcast being on the airwaves, you have got to get out. Please, please, please. Quite a few have done it this week. Thank you so much to the people who bothered themselves to do it. That's Muller's chair. That's not my arse. And the other people are iMen Max. We love these guys. Callum will be here tomorrow telling us how he's getting on with Patrice's PC and how he's got on with it. Anything with an Apple logo, they will fix. It doesn't matter how old it is. And 50% of the repairs that they do are on legacy machines. So they will go in and they will do soldering level changes on your logic board or your motherboard or your graphics cards and that kind of stuff. They will do very, very detailed changes that will save you a fortune, because you won't be buying massive components off them. They'll give you refurb machines, so you can get a machine that's got a new lease of life with an SSD and extra memory in it. And they will also recover data for you as well. And if you're sitting there at home looking at a pile of Apple stuff that you've got, you think, oh, it's just taking up space. What shall I do with it? Give them a call, tell them what you've got, they'll give you a price, you ship it to them, they'll even send the UPS label to you so that you can ship it to them, and when they get it, they'll appraise it and they'll offer you the price again. And Ian Lewis did that with us, and within 2 hours he had the money in his bank account. So get all your old tech out and see if iMen Max. We love them. Go to imenmax.com, give them support as well, and please get out on the socials and say thanks to at imenmax. Right. Time for the cool thing. Start us off, Mr. Grant.
I've got a cup. It's a twofer, because one's a freebie and the other one costs some money. One of my other hobbies is meddling around with watches.
All right.
And I found that this superb little tool, if your mechanical watch gets magnetized That's a bad thing. It runs too fast. Right. I got one watch that was going, and I thought, I'm going to have to buy some expensive app. No, you can get a freebie. The first link is for a thing called Lapsi. You set it up with basically with the compass in your mat and your phone. You need a magnetic source to kind of to check it, and it, you can calibrate it with that, and then you can wave your watch over it. It turns out what happened was I've got one of those magnetic chargers on my desk here, and I had the watch near it, and I think that magnetized the balance. This little app, a freebie, you can wave your mechanical watch over it and it'll tell you whether it's got magnetism in it. Superb.
Can you demagnetize a watch?
Yes, you can buy a thing from Amazon for a tenner.
Oh, right.
It's a little electricized box that you plug. It's got a plug in it and a blue box. It looks ridiculous. And a red button on it. And you basically wave it over and it does the demagnetizing. You can get another one where you pass it through it. There's a few around. And that'll just take the magnetization off it. So that's what I did. And now it's running nicely again.
So what does Watch Tuner Time Grapher do?
Ah, that's a slightly different thing. This is a £12 app. You can get a proper watchmaker's bit of kit called a Time Grapher. What it does is it measures the tick and the tock.
Okay.
So we can tell how well tuned the mechanical movement is. They're about 100, 200 quid. And for poor bodgers like me, that's a bit expensive of a thing to buy. But I can buy a 13 quid app that I can stick on my phone and my iPad. And with the headphones from my phone, I can put that on the back of my watch, and that will then measure again the tick and the tock, and can tell me if it's running in time or not. That's how I could tell that. I also use that then after with my magnetized watch to try and work out just how badly out it was, and it was running sort of like 10,000. You see the values on the thing when you look at it. It shows you how many seconds a day it's out. Mechanical watches always are. Just by dint of it being a mechanical mechanism, they're just inherently not as accurate as quartz. But with that, you could see how many seconds a day. It was like it for 500-600 seconds a day. That's a bit wrong. Normally 10 to 15 is kind of acceptable. And now it's running back at 10 or 15 like it should do. Now I demagnetized it. But so it's a handy little thing. And I mean, again, poor things for video, but I've got, see, that's like a little Swiss watch movement. I bought a box full. I'm busily taking apart and rebuilding and messing around with, learning how to do watch repair. Very relaxing.
I've only known you for 6 years.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit longer. Why would I not know that you've done horology?
Because I've only been doing horology for the last year or so, sort of properly messing around with them. Maybe the last 6 months I probably got mad with it. But collecting watches, I've been doing that for the last 10, 15 years, on and off. I'm still a poor man, so I haven't got any Rolexes or Omegas, but I have various other bits and bobs. I enjoy lots of Seikos and things like that.
Bloody good, mate. Nice picks. I like those. Very different.
Something interesting. Something a bit different.
Very different. Jeffrey, yours. I'm interested.
Okay, so this iPhone and iPad app, it's ISH Shell. This is a command line shell app for people that are using Linux, and it gives you a Linux environment on your iPhone or iPad, but it can also link back, just SSH back to whatever Linux system you have.
What?
and then just gives you command line access to that system. And it's a really cool app, and it does what it needs to do really well. It's also just totally free. This app also just recently was a controversial thing because Apple was going to pull it from the App Store because you can do package installs with this. And so Apple said no because it can do that. This violates App Store rules, and so we're going to pull it from the App Store. And then when it came right down to actually doing it, Apple said, sorry, we made a mistake. Didn't mean to stress you out. The app can stay. So it's still on the App Store, which is great. And so if you're doing anything with Linux and you want to do it on or from your iPhone or iPad, here you go. It's a really nice tool, and it's free.
Excellent.
Sounds cool.
I like that. Well done. Patrice, I can't open yours because it gives a Facebook link that it won't let me open. You're on mute.
I muted myself. That's yeah. yeah, if you want to know how to stop the Apple News links from opening in Apple News, then you will have to listen to tomorrow's Mac show because there I will tell you how.
Oh, okay.
The link I posted, yeah, it's a Facebook link because that's the only universal one that you can find. My pick is The Ready Room. It's a Will Wheaton, like half an hour show. Basically, after every episode, I think they started with, I'm pretty sure they started with Picard. They might have started at the end of Discovery of second season. But they definitely did it for Picard, and they're not doing it for the third season of Discovery. They have like interviews and sneak peek and like behind the scenes stuff where they like show how certain things were produced and like costumes and whatever. Really, really well produced. Really, really cool. I mean, Will Wheaton is awesome. And like you can tell he is really excited about the show and about Star Trek and about everything. Like he's kind of like a Star Trek geek who's like completely freaking out that he is doing this. It's a great show. The only downside is it's on YouTube, but only in the US. It's on CBS All Access, only in the US. The only way you can get it outside of the US is through Facebook. Thanks, CBS. But good. At least we can get it there. So awesome, unfortunately, mate. You will need Facebook to watch that. But it is absolutely worth it. As I said, it's half an hour. And it's really good, really well made.
Brilliant. Muller, what have
it's
you
It's also the only place you get to see the teaser for next week's episodes.
Absolutely.
Muller, what have you got for us, mate?
Can I do two?
Yeah, go on.
I've got Truth Seekers, which is on Prime. Has anyone watched it yet?
Nope.
Oh, you've got to watch it. It's quintessentially English, and it's the well, it's just really, really good. It's what's his name? It's Nick Frost Mark yeah. McDowell, Samson Ageo, and it basically it's there's individual stories, but there's a link through them, so it's a bit like Star Trek, but there are individual stories, and they're just looking at ghosts, and it's really good, really funny, and it's well worth a watch. I think there's 8 or 10 of them. I think it's 10 actually.
I love Nick Frost because he's like me. If I was famous, I'd be like him. Because a lot of people when they get famous, you're like Simon Pegg. He's got skinny. He's got muscly. He's got fit. He's done the A class music. You know the A class movies. And then Nick Frost has just gone. I got shitloads of money to buy beer with now.
I Simon love you, Pegg's Nick Frost. In it as well. Simon Pegg plays.
I know, that's still good, mate.
I'm not going to spoil it for you, but it could be baddie, it could be goodie. It's up to you. You don't find out till the 10th episode.
Nick Frost would be me if I was famous.
He's a good lad. Yeah. He's really funny. My second one, though, is a blood pressure thing.
A blood pressure cuff.
Yeah.
For all the whiskey you drink and all the laughing that you do, it's true secret.
Oh, yeah. Well, basically, I had a health check at the doctor's about, I don't know, a month ago. And they said my blood pressure's a bit high. So I went and bought myself one of these Withings things. So well worth it. And it took a while to get used to it.
Which one did you buy?
I bought the BPM one, the cheaper one.
Yeah, okay.
Because so, I've got the, obviously Apple Watch does a lot of what the BB Core does, BMP Core does. And I've got, I was given the Nokia weighing scale when my other Withings watch, the Nokia watch, whatever, got that condensation on the screen. So, and they then sent me a new watch, which I then gave to your son, which he never used.
No.
But
I found
that
it
was, but I got, to be honest with you, I got my money's worth out of that because I got two watches, and a weighing scale. So
how big is the cuff?
Well, if you look on the on my screen, can you see me?
No, you need to hold it up higher.
Okay.
So where do you put it, on your lower arm or on your upper arm?
No, you have to put it up your lower arm. There's a button here.
You put it on your upper arm?
Yeah.
Like a normal cuff, yeah.
There's a button here and you have to go down And it has to be on the inside as well, level with your heart. And you can set it to take one reading, or you can set it to take three consecutive readings, which I do because...
I'll go back to my original question. How big is the cuff?
Well, it's about... Well, the cuff. Oh, right, I'll show you.
Is it quite tight on your arm, or is it comfortably huge?
Look at the size of it, mate. It will go around your arm. It will go around your head.
Well, no, the reason I'm asking is because I go to the doctors, and I ended up being given a blood pressure drug because I went, oh, you got high blood pressure. And they put one of the standard, you know, automatic blood pressure measuring things on me. And the drugs they gave me were making me feel horrible. So I went back to see another doctor, and she came out with a cuff that was like a size of a piece of A3 paper. And she said, did they use this cuff? I was like, no. And this thing was huge. And she said, right, okay. So she wrapped it around my arm. She went, 125 over 75, there's nothing wrong with you, go home. I'm like, I've been on these drugs for no good reason. She went, no, they've used the small cuff, haven't they? I went, yeah, the small cuffs just accelerate your blood pressure and make it look worse than it actually is. So that if that cuff sits on and actually wraps around and doesn't start ripping off during the test, then fantastic. That's really, really good. I'm impressed. But I don't think it will. If it starts
17
to rip
inches,
off,
according to the spec, between 9 and 17. Depends what your bicep is.
It might be. I don't know. We have to bring it over next time, mate. We'll take my blood pressure and.
Yeah, cool. I can do that. No sweat.
That'd be good. Do a road test. Michael Thing is the Rotec inspection camera endoscope. And you're gonna go, well, that's a bit random. And when I say endoscope, don't be writing in thinking that I'm making porn films with this, because it's not. No, my mum and dad's next door neighbour has got a bit of a problem with water in his foundations. It was under the floorboards, sitting on the concrete foundation. So he's had some problems with a bit of damp in his front room and that kind of stuff. And he said, you know, your mum and dad might have a bit of problem as well. No. Well, there's no rising damp at the walls or anything like that. So I think it's probably fine. A bit of settled water is the end of the world. And then it kind of started playing on my mind, and I'm like, oh, what should I do? So in the end, I went on Amazon and bought one of these, 54 quid, and it's bloody brilliant. I've had it through the air bricks at the front of the house, and the camera is, so like if I pick the camera up and I shine it across the room, it looks crap. It's very, very specific focal length, but the lighting on it is excellent. And if you get that focal length right, the image is crystal clear. It's really, really good. It comes with a 32 gig SSD in it, or little micro SD card, and it's got a 26 milliamp hour battery, 2600 milliamp hour battery, which will last you about 40 minutes of inspection and recording. And it's absolutely brilliant. Well impressed with it. And there's no water under my parents' house as well. So complete waste of money. But I'm going to find another use for it. I promise you.
Oh, God,
no.
I'm gonna wait till they bash, mate. I'm gonna find a way of seriously pissing off people with this. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Grant?
The usual places. I'll be just in this desk. If anyone wants me, I'm here. I'm in York, but I'll be on. I will be around. I make some attempt to be around the chat room a bit more in the Slack room, and I make some attempt to be on Twitter occasionally. I'm TIOABOA at TIOABOA. I'm found on the Facebooks. I'm found on LinkedIn. There, look for me as Ian Grant. If there's anything to do with Commvault, that's me.
Brilliant, mate. Thank you very much. Love you coming along. And we'll see you again next week.
You will indeed.
Mr. Jeff, where would you be?
Twitter and Instagram, Jay Gamut, both places. The big show here today, the Mac show tomorrow. And like basically right now, any other show that's been talking about Apple stuff, because apparently there's stuff to talk about. Also, to everyone that suggested watching Ted Lasso, thank you. Oh, holy crap, what an awesome show.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, loved every single episode.
Excellent. Lovely. It's what TV should be. Uplifting,
yes.
Enjoyable, laughable, fantastic.
Yeah,
awesome. You don't have to be into football to like it. Nope. I don't like football, and I loved it.
Yeah, same. Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you looked at it going, what the hell's football?
Well, I know because I've watched BBC for long enough.
Good.
So, you know, proper football, not the weird American thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I get the impression that Ted Lasso is not the first version. There's got to be an American version where he was running a US football team.
No, it's an original.
The Ted Lasso character is from, it's like a series of sport commercials. It might have been ESPN or something.
Yeah, something like that.
And then he just built out the character from.
Was Sudeikis that character? Did Sudeikis do that?
I think it's supposed to be that character, but just like really fleshed out.
Yeah.
I could have swore there was something on YouTube. I saw that he was doing a. That there's been something out there.
What was the James Corden thing where he was coached someone or other?
So the show was NBC, by the way. They did it because they were showing the British, I think, Premier League on NBC. That's why they created it.
Oh, right. And then it's just taken on a life of its own. Yeah, and yeah, so exactly. It should. Patrice, where can we get you?
Yeah, as Jeff said, every week here on the Mac Show and on the Big Show, everything I do, all the social links and everything on thepatrice.com. And my podcast is The Foodie Flashback on foodieflashback.com.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. And Muller, where would you be?
Muller Biker on Twitter, on the Slack room, and sitting getting drunk in my bedroom on whiskey.
Good lad. Nothing wrong with that. My name's Ewan Rankin. Get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. You can follow the network at British Tech as well. We're back again next week with the Big Show, but tomorrow we've got the Mac Show, the wash-up from the whole of the keynote, so it should be a good, fun time, and there's loads of people on again, which will be good. And have a great weekend. Thanks for listening.